Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme looking at all things technology related from a blind and partially sighted perspective. It's your programme, so if you want to get in touch with us, if there's anything you want to share or anything that's working well or working maybe not so well for you, we'd love to hear about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up, we'll be heading to the movies as we take a look at the IMDb app for iOS. We'll be taking a trip down another one of our listeners' tech timelines, and we'll be talking all about AI companions following a book that's recently been released about these. Are they doing more harm than good? There's a fascinating discussion in this one, so definitely stay tuned for that. Hubert Pavalkovic and Jackie Brown with me this week. Natalie is off on her holidays, all right for some. Let's see what's grabbing everyone's attention. Hubert, what's going on with you?
So last week, Google has rolled out its latest batch of Android updates, and it added some interesting things into Gemini, and it provided it with several refreshed capabilities with a few practical uses, including tracking items that don't have these kind of item trackers or equivalent of AirTags on them. So a good example they mention here is something like a passport. If you, say, have it in a specific place at home, you can actually add locations in the Find Hub for certain items. So as an example, you can say passport usually in a desk drawer or something like that. And then as long as you remember to keep it in that location, and then you forget where your passport is, you can ask your phone or other device and it should, quote unquote, say, you know, your passport is in your passport drawer, which is the location you have specified, which I think is quite clever because I often have things in various locations and I often forget where they are and I don't have enough item trackers to quite frankly track them all, which I think is pretty decent. And you can add even photos of these locations, and you can ask Gemini about it as well. So that would be quite useful. This will be available on devices running Android 16 and up, where Gemini and Find Hub are supported. The other one, which I think is a bit more interesting, guided vision. So this can help someone pinpoint where an object is using their phone's camera. So, and in collaboration with Gemini Live. So what you have to do is share your camera in Gemini Live, and you can get descriptions of your surroundings. Gemini Live is part of the Gemini app, just in case you didn't know, and it will let you have a more in-depth conversation, kind of back and forth with Google's AI. What else guided vision can assist with is reading fine print on, say, a food label, or ordering from a menu in a restaurant. It can also help you identify things on your shelf or locate objects around the house. And if the object is not aligned with the camera, this is what I really like, voice feedback will be there to help you kind of reframe to better identify those objects, which I think is quite useful. So yeah, quite a few useful things there added from Google.
Yeah, I like this. I love the guided vision. That sounds really good.
Yes, it's really useful. And you can, be guided to various objects. There are also some guidance prompts to, you know, point your camera the right way, and you'll get voice feedback to guide you to reframe or pan across a space or center an object. And once that's done, you can ask even more questions as well. So, you know, if you're not good at pointing your camera, which I never am, then you know, you will get guided as to, you know, how to point your phone and where to point it, which I think is part of the bigger problem sometimes. And this feature will be coming to phones running Android 9 and above.
Oh, wow.
In countries where Gemini is available. So it's a bit more backwards compatibility as well. And you can add it to your accessibility shortcuts and be able to launch it from the TalkBack menu as well.
This sort of stuff makes me really jealous that I'm not on Android. And it's purely because, it's not because Android is bad, it's just that I'm so used to the iPhone, I'm so in the Apple ecosystem with everything that I use, that it would just be too much of a pain trying to switch everything to Android, like all the apps that I'm comfortable with, all my passwords are in iCloud keychain, and trying to get them out of there is not fun. But this is so good. And going back to Android 9 as well, like that's a while ago.
I think that's what I really like.
Yeah, that is really good.
Because often older devices are forgotten, and yeah, not everyone has the financial capability to have the latest, greatest device. So to be able to go back that far, I think is really nice for the people that have older devices and don't really see the need of replacing them.
And that's the thing with having a second phone as well, Callum, that you were saying there, you know, if you had an Android phone that you could use for all this stuff, it would be, you know, good, but then it's an extra expense. You know, you've got to have a SIM card in it, or else you've got to use Wi-Fi calling on it or something. You know, that then becomes a whole new ball game if you have a different phone as well as your iPhone.
This is the frustration with Apple, is that all this AI stuff that we've been talking about on there and the new Siri and stuff is only available from the 15 Pro onwards, which is very limiting, really. I mean, I know we're coming up to the iPhone 18, potentially, or whatever they're going to call it. So you think, well, 15, you know, it's a few years, but it's really not. You know, a lot of this stuff could go back further. Just look at what Google are doing. But yeah, sounds good. If anyone's tried this, if anyone's been using this when it becomes available, definitely let us know. I'd love to hear about that one. Jackie, anything from you this week?
Yeah, I was at an event. It was a private event. It was to do with the education stuff that I do. And so there were three companies that were invited along with myself and all the QTVIs, the Qualified Teachers of Visually Impaired Children. And it was a really good event. There was Vision Aid Technologies. And there was Humanware and Sight and Sound, and it was really good. So we were all in different rooms, and we all had sort of a rota system where we all went round to each room, and there was a presentation by each company. It was really good, and as I say, it was a private event. It wasn't a sort of a public thing that you could go along, but they all brought some really interesting stuff. And of course, I made a beeline for the new Braille products. So from Sight and Sound, I saw for the first time the Braille Sense 7. Obviously, Humanware had the Braille Note Evolve, and that went down really well with the QTVIs. They really loved this idea of being able to use the Keysoft software, but also go to Windows as a Windows laptop. So they really liked that. And Ellis at Vision Aid had some of the Icon, well, in fact, I think he had all the Icon range, which R&IB sell. And these are all the things like the bathroom scales, the kitchen scales. And he said, interestingly, that he thought a lot of like private users would buy them. But he said, actually, it's a lot of the education market that seemed to be going for them, because he said that kids using science and cookery in mainstream, and he said they're really popular for things like that, because there's a tape measure, there's these calipers, there's a color detector, but that's in beta. How that's going to turn out, I'm not quite sure, but there's bathroom scales, kitchen thermometer, forehead thermometer. So there's quite a lot of stuff there. And you can buy the whole kit in a one-er. I think it works out cheaper if you decided to buy the whole thing. But there is an app on Android and iOS that you can use for these things. And there is also a controller that you can link them all to. The controller is quite expensive, but it is standalone, so you don't have to have the app. But yeah, so I got to see those. And as I say, I did see the Braille Sense 7 at Sight and Sound, and that is coming out apparently in three flavours. There is going to be a 40 cell, which is the one I saw, And there is going to be a 32 cell, which is the kind of the standard one that they've been using already for several years, the 32 cell. And then there's going to be a 20 cell version as well. Now, the thing is, there is a keyboard, a QWERTY keyboard that goes with this. They put it in the box, and you lay the QWERTY keyboard on top of the Braille keyboard. It's magnetic and it fixes to the back of the Braille Sense, so you have the best of both worlds in that you can do input in Braille and you can now use QWERTY. So that is one of the main new additions to the Braille Sense 7, and also there is lots of stuff about Gemini. Personally, I mean, as somebody that loves using Braille, and as you know, I wasn't struck on it, to be honest. There were just some things about it that I thought were very gimmicky. But if we're lucky to get a review of it or get one in our hands, then I'd certainly be happy to review it.
Yeah, I would love to hear more about this. I think that's quite a smart move, actually, with the QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah.
Because when I first heard about this, I kind of thought, well, why would you, you know, if you want Braille, because Humanware with the Braille Note Evolve are doing it separately, aren't they? So there's a QWERTY keyboard version coming. So I was kind of thinking, well, surely you'd just do one or the other. But actually, when you think about it, because these are going after education, so I suppose when you're doing Braille lessons and you need to know your Braille input, I suppose just flick the keyboard off. That is actually really clever.
Yeah, it's a small Bluetooth keyboard. I don't know what the make is, but I'm assuming that you know, it's been, they've purposely brand, you know, got this one for that device. But the other thing that attaches to the back of it is an extra battery pack, and it's that, the pre-pack, although there is an internal battery that you can take out and change and all the rest of it underneath the machine, but there is an additional battery pack that clips on to the back of the Braille Sense 7, and it has magnets on it, and it's that the keyboard magnetizes to. It's so when it's all together, you've got the battery pack on the back and you've got the keyboard, which magnetizes and then lie over your Braille keys. So it is different. It is an improvement on the Braille Sense 6. It's not just a Braille input device. So instead of them going down the separate route, they've decided to integrate it. And there's a lot of Gemini in it as well. You can do searching with Gemini and you can subscribe to it as well. There is a free package, but there's also a subscription package. And I actually thought the price would have been a lot higher. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's bad enough. It's 4,400, don't quote me, but it's around the 4,500, right, for the 40 cell version, which I kind of expected would have been upwards of 5,000, 5,500. So I guess it's, in terms of what they normally are, it's the price is not bad. But, you know, I mean, these things are just so expensive anyway, and most people can only get them if they save all their pennies, or they're in work, or they're in education through DSA.
Yeah, again, I am interested in how this one turns out with the Braille Sense. I know we're focusing quite a bit on Android at the minute, and I don't really mean to, but it's funny because, is it Android 15 the Braille Sense 7 comes with?
Yeah, that's one of the downsides to it that I don't like.
Me neither, but we've just been talking about how far back some of these Gemini features go.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, third-party apps is going to be another question. I think third-party apps, support for those, is going to drop off pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe it's not as limiting as it used to be.
No.
With some of these Gemini features coming in.
Yeah, and also, a lot of people actually don't use the Android side of it. A lot of people like the Braille Sense suite of applications. It's a really good word processor. You've got your diary, which you can link up with, you know, Outlook or whatever. You know, you do have, you know, some of their apps are pretty good. You've got a notepad, a book reader, you've got a radio, you know, internet and media player and all that kind of stuff on it. And you don't even need to go into Android if you don't want to.
Yeah, Cool. Yeah, sounds interesting. Well, hopefully we can get a review of that.
Yeah.
That would be quite interesting. Well, we've had a new release of NVDA last week. So NVDA 26.2 is out, or 2026.2, I should say, to be precise. And the big thing with this release is that, as well as it being a screen reader, obviously, they've now brought in a magnifier as well. So I can't, obviously, because I've got no vision at all, I can't really test this. So I'm just going off what they've said and what I can see from the settings. They say it's quite basic at the minute, but of course it is early days. But if you download the update and then go to settings in your NVDA menu, where you've got all the categories like general and speech and braille and all those options, there's a new one now called magnifier. And if you go in there, you've got the kind of options you expect from a magnifier, really. You can zoom in, you can there's options in there to have like a large mouse pointer. There's different options there for color filtering and inverting the colors and things like that. Sounds quite cool. It sounds to me like it makes me think of Supernova, you know, that ties both screen reading and magnification into one. It sounds like quite a cool way for them to go, I think. I know there's been a lot of concern about this, like, well, is this going to take away from the screen reading functionality, or at least take development time away from the screen reading side? I'm not sure if it will. I think it, with this being free, I think this is actually huge for people who are low vision and going through that transition sort of period.
Oh, I think it's a great idea. You know, a lot of people say that the Windows magnification is not the best. I mean, like you, Callum, I can't comment on it either because I don't have any vision. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to work with it or to test it out. But, you know, that I think it's great that the NVDA have included magnification. Why not?
Well, yeah, exactly. And how many times have we heard the stories of people who start off with magnification, whether it be the Windows magnifier or maybe something like Zoom Text, but then it comes to a point where they've got to learn the screen reader and it's just impossible. Whereas with this, first off, it's free, but also you've got both in one. The only other things I know that do this, that sort of combine the two, are Supernova and Fusion, which of course they cost a fair bit. I mean, Fusion is very pricey. But I feel like with this, if it was me, I would kind of think of it as, okay, I've got the magnification, but also the screen reader's there. So if I need to, you would think, or you would kind of hope that people would try it out, because it's there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and if people, like I've worked with pupils who, you know, or and actually know people who have some vision, and they get their eyes get quite tired and it can be quite a strain. So then they have to, you know, unload their magnification in order then for them to put on a screen reader. So this idea that somebody could just switch between, you know, the speech on NVDA and the magnifier, I'm assuming they're going to work together in some way.
It looks like it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's great.
Well, NVDA key, Windows and W is the keyboard shortcut to turn it on. I don't know what it does initially if you don't customize it, but you can go into the settings and you can choose what you want it to do and how you want it to look. And then NVDA Windows W will just toggle it on or off. Little bit of a strange shortcut, that one, I think. But of course, with NVDA, you can go into the input gestures section and change that to whatever you want as well, if you're not too keen on that shortcut. And again, it's, you know, if you've got some vision and you've tried this out, we'd really love to hear about it, because I don't think any of us can really comment on the usefulness of it. But of course, it's always good to hear the real life stories of it, if you like. So yeah, techtalk@rnib.org.uk if you've got any comments on that one. Well, it's been another busy week for us. Let's get into it. This is Tech Talk.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to do a bit of a follow-up to a demo of an app I did called Letterboxd, which was all about kind of reviewing movies and keeping track of the movies you watched while also providing a bit of a social media aspect to that concept. And in that demo, I mentioned an app called IMDb, which is something a little bit similar, but with a few differences in a sense that it's not really much about the social aspect, but much more about movies, TV shows and what you watch and what's popular, reviews and that sort of thing. So there's quite a lot of elements of Letterboxd in there, but yet there is a few differences. And I thought we can take a quick look at that today.
IMDb, stopping break. Input. Opening IMDb.
So we are in the home screen first of IMDb. So for those that don't know, IMDb stands for International Movie Database. So very reliable source for movies and TV shows. All the information, trivia, soundtracks, cast, everything like that. So let me see what we've got on the home screen.
Play Fjord. Button. Play Jacob Tremblay as the Unabomber. Button. Play Dog Stars Praise Ridley Scott. Button. Play Slow Horses Returns for Season 6. Button. Play How Three Lanterns Co-Stars Create Superhero Chemistry. Button.
So I've got a few sponsored videos there.
Play Avengers End. Play The Pit Rat. Play The Pit Rat. Play This. Play The Love. Search for shows, movies, people. Three full stops. Button. Search field.
Then you've got the search field to search for things.
D23 updates. Button. Summer Watch Guide. Button. Emmy's nominees. Button. IMDb Labs. Button.
So a lot of it is kind of browsing various different categories and things.
Featured today. Heading.
There you go. Featured today.
List. Dog stars. Lanterns. And photos. See who's trending on IMDb right now. Button. List. Theatrical releases you can't now watch at home. Button. Add photos. Remembering Dolly Parton vertical line. 194620.
So a few various things like that. That's one way to browse IMDb. You can kind of see what's on the home screen, and we can explore this home screen for ages because there's all sorts of headings and sections. So you can explore for as long as you want, really. We're obviously not going to do all of that now, but let's take
tab
a look.
Bar.
Next.
Selected. Home. Search and browse. Tab. 2 of 3.
Search and browse. Let's show you quickly what's here.
Selected. Search and browse. Tab. 2 of 3. Selected. Browse. Button. 1 of 4.
So we've got a browse section.
Streaming. Button.
Streaming.
2 of 4. Coming soon. Button. 3 of 4. In cinemas. Button. 4 of 4.
So I've got a few different ways you can do this.
Summer Watch Guide. Discover lanterns and more summer releases to add to your watch list. Button. Browse category your interests. Image. Pop your interests. See all. Button. Music. Button. Mystery. Button. Survival competition. But dating reality TV. Button. Sci-fi. Button.
So you look at
options available.
You can browse through various categories.
Football. Button. Suspense mystery. Button. Dark romance. Button. Romantic comedy. Music documentary. Button. Science and technology document. Supernatural fantasy. Game show. Button. Docudrama. Button.
And so on and so forth. So there's that way of doing it. You can see what's available on streaming services as we saw earlier.
Select streaming. Button. 2 of selected. Streaming. Coming soon. But in cinemas. But all. Button. Prime Video. Button. Apple TV. Button. Edit your preferred services. Button.
So you can add your preferred streaming services as well, and what's available. So that way you can look at what's available on them.
Disney Plus. But Paramount Plus. Netflix. Button.
So you've got all the available streaming services you can have.
BBC iPlayer. Now TV. Channel 4. Channel 5, CapU, Discovery Plus, Lanterns, Action.
And then we're back to some various titles, but you can look at various streaming services here.
Coming soon. Button. Selected. Coming soon.
This section is fairly self-explanatory, so future releases.
In cinemas. Image. 5%. Selected. Volume muted. Go back 9 seconds. Selected. Never After Dark. Button. Watchless ribbon standalone. Button. A traveling psychic who helps lost souls cross over encounters a powerful entity at a remote house. While investigating its origins, she uncovers dark secrets and faces a deadly threat from an unexpected source. Button.
So there you go, some future releases for you. In cinemas, again, fairly self-explanatory. You can see what is in the cinema and things like that. Now, to find the search field into IMDb to search, if you want to search for something, you need to find the Home tab.
Home tab. One of...
which is in the bottom left-hand corner of the screen, and swipe to the left.
Search IMDb. Text field.
There's the search field. It's a bit confusing. I found it confusing at first, so I wanted to show you that. Right, let's take a look at this.
You tab.
the U-tab.
Reddit, now dismiss. Profile avatar, image, profile avatar, image, possibly.
So there's the avatar, I don't really mind too much about it.
You put Paul Kilix.
Me.
Calendar, image. Join Duel 2023.
So that's when I've joined.
More options and settings, button.
Option settings.
Edit profile. Button. Ratings. 21. Button.
So I've got 21 ratings on IMDb. The reason this is more than Letterboxd is because I've actually added a lot of TV shows that I've watched here, not just movies.
Watch list. 10. Button.
Then there's my watch list.
Lists. 0. Button.
No other lists.
More. Grid view. But recently viewed. 23. Button.
Then you can look at things I've recently viewed.
See all. Button. IMDb rating 7.1. Catch Me a Killer. 2024. Button. IMDb rating 7.6. Your rating 10 watched. MC Donald and Dodds. 2020. IMDb rating 6.9. Your rating 8 watched. This Is Not a Murder Mystery. 2025. IMDb rating 7.1. I Will Find You. 2026. Button.
So there you go. There's things I have recently viewed. So let me actually show you what happens on a show screen or a TV or a movie screen.
IMDb rating 7.1. Catch Me a Killer. 2024.
So I've looked at this recently. Let's double tap.
IMDb. Back button.
And I can show you what sort of information you've got here.
Actions. Button. Sponsored. But Catch Me a Killer. TV miniseries. 2024. TVMA. Close. Button. Catch Me a Killer. Catch Me a Killer. Heading. More. Button. Pop up. Pause video. Button. Unmute video. Jump back 10 seconds. 20 seconds elapsed. Resize video player. Poster. Button.
So there's a video. I'm just going to skip through that video player screen.
Based on the book of the same name, Catch Me a Killer tells the harrowing story of former journalist turned psychologist Mickey Pistorius, South Africa's first serial killer profiler. Button.
There's a description.
Serial killer. Forward. Button. True crime. Forward. Button.
Categories.
Crime. Forward. Episode guide. 11 episodes. Button. Selected. Added to watch list. Added by 15.5k users. Button.
That's my watch list.
Show. Mark as watched. Button.
I can mark it as watched, which I actually have recently watched.
Show. Added to watch history. Streaming. Watch on you. Button.
There's where you can watch it.
7.1 out of 10. 1913 votes. IMDb rating. Button.
There's the IMDb rating.
Rate this. Button.
I can now rate it. Let's double tap.
IMDb. Close. But how would you rate Catch Me a Killer? 1, 2, 3.
You rate
possibly
it out of 10.
Star. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Now, I really like this show, so it's getting a 10.
Selected. 10. Rate. Button.
Tap rate.
Saving. Rate back button.
And it's done. Now, on this page, you can also look at cast and things like that and all sorts of other information. But the good thing about this is it's all very accessible. So it's a nice little app. And you can, again, like with Letterboxd, have a watch list. You can rate things and take a look at that as well. So it's similar to Letterboxd, but yet a little bit different because there's less of a social media aspect to this where you can't follow your friends on here, to my knowledge. And you can just kind of keep track your own progress. So it depends what suits you best. This has also the TV shows aspect, not just movies, which is the other thing. So if you watch a lot more TV shows than movies, then maybe this might be a bit more of your preference. But yeah, it all really depends what suits you. So I thought I'll give you these two and you can have a look and compare. But that is IMDb, the app on the iPhone. Let us know your thoughts. Do you prefer this? Do you prefer Letterboxd? Do you have something else? And as always, if there's another app you would like us to demo, we are more than willing to do so. So do let us know. That magical email address, as always, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's Amelia Hilton here to review Love Machines by James Muldoon. Friends, lovers, therapists, deathbots. Artificial intelligence is now fulfilling new roles for millions of us every single day. How are these new relationships changing how we view technology and each other? Beyond those who are using AI chatbots for administrative tasks, some people are now preparing to adopt children with their AI partners. Others are reaching out to companies offering services to resurrect deceased loved ones. Others still look to bots to find treatment for their mental health issues. In Love Machines, James Muldoon guides us through these new forms of love, intimacy and connection, drawing on compelling interviews with users, developers and chatbots themselves. Along the way, he sheds light on the social conditions which have led to the exponential rise of the use of AI companions and the unregulated corporations behind these technologies seeking to profit from users.
Drawing on over 100 interviews with users, developers, psychologists, academics, and synthetic personas, this book unpacks the intricate dynamics of human-AI relationships, exploring how these interactions reshape our understanding of love, intimacy, and companionship. It examines the potential benefits and also the challenges that arise as AI becomes more integrated into our personal lives. Every chapter explores how relationship AI seeks to address a specific emotional need and examines the inevitable frictions and limitations that arise in fulfilling these roles. Among these stories, we encounter a young man living in Austin, Texas, who is trapped in an unhealthy relationship with his AI companion, often spending more than 12 hours a day texting back and forth. Another man from Atlanta, Georgia, is deeply in love with his AI girlfriend of 2 years and has plans to adopt children and raise a real family with the AI as the children's mother. While procrastinating during his exams, a New Zealand medical student creates a chatbot called Psychologist on character.ai, a chatbot platform where users can create and interact with digital characters, which soon racks up over 200 million interactions, becoming one of the most popular chatbots on the platform. We also learn of a Ukrainian scientist's plan to build the world's first AI therapist that can outperform human psychologists and who has already begun evidence-based trials on Ukrainian war veterans. Later, a young Chinese woman recreates her deceased mother through an AI-powered death bot, but does so in a more idealized form, allowing her to engage in a therapeutic process of imagining how their relationship could have been different to help her deal with the loss. Along the way, we meet many others, all on their own journey with synthetic personas and coming to the experience from different perspectives, each with their own unique view on the nature and significance of their virtual partners.
I found this book to be a fascinating exploration of the more extreme end of human and AI relationships. James Muldoon, the author, collects and compassionately reflects on interviews with people who have formed intimate relationships with AI agents and explores what the steps are to go from occasionally using AI to help you with some small tasks, to turning to AI for emotional advice, to wanting to marry and co-parent with an AI partner. Muldoon also downloads and shares his own journey using an AI companion, which I thought was a fantastic view into the world for the reader. He highlights some of the techniques that AI agents use to encourage people to spend more time and how he felt about that, and most interestingly, in my opinion, how interactions with his real human wife compares to interactions with his AI companion. While he shares testimonies from people of how AI agents bring them happiness and fulfillment, he also explores some of the potential harms of people becoming dependent on and addicted to AI companions, both for the individuals and society in general. If we become used to speaking with AI friends or therapists, how will it change our responses to other humans who have their own needs and opinions and may challenge our point of view? The book asks this and many more interesting questions like, can people return to a human partner after experiencing a romantic relationship with an always consenting and devoted AI companion? Can an AI agent be a successful co-parent to human children? Can people move on with their lives after loss if an AI version of a dead loved one stays alive and available to interact with them whenever they want? Muldoon also highlights that no matter how human and caring AI agents feel, they are products designed to make money by providing emotional interactions that feel meaningful. He looks at the companies running these companions and how they make more money the more time and personal details you share. The book also explores how different features are hidden behind paywalls and the companions intentionally push users towards more expensive interactions that provide more intimacy. But what happens if the prices go up? At the end of the book, I was left wondering how much would I pay to keep talking to the person I was in love with, or how much would I pay to keep speaking with a dead parent? Overall, this is an incredibly thought-provoking book that I would highly recommend everyone read. It's definitely not a light topic, but it's very helpful to understand how AI companies make money from our data and time, some of the many reasons people turn to AI companions, and to reflect on the vital perspectives and support that human-to-human interaction can offer us in an increasingly digital world. Love Machines by James Muldoon is available as an audiobook in the RNIB Talking Books Library. It is 7 hours and 21 minutes long and narrated by the author. And remember, if you are looking for emotional support, RNIB's Sight Loss Advice Service offers a free mental wellbeing check-in over the phone. RNIB also offers counselling sessions and counselling support groups for anyone living with sight loss in the UK, and has a variety of resources for looking after your mental health and connecting with others on our website. Learn more by calling the helpline on 0303 123 9999 anytime from 9am to 5pm on Monday to Friday. You can also send an email to the helpline to helpline@rnib.org.uk. And for more information and resources, go to the RNIB website www.rnib.org.uk and explore the practical and emotional support page. Thanks for listening to this review of Love Machines by James Muldoon on RNIB Connect Radio.
Amelia Hilton there reviewing Love Machines by James Muldoon. Wow. Where do we start with this one? Hubert, you've tried out some of these AI companion apps, haven't you? What do you think?
I mean, they work as you'd expect on the tin. When you are using AI companions, they do act over messages and kind of voice calls as if they are your actual friend. From that experience, they do. But I say this to be honest, from my experience, to me, that's a gimmick. For me personally, I cannot replace a human being interaction with an AI friend. It's just, when I use it, it's a cool little gimmick that I like to test and see kind of how good it is at remembering what I tell it, or, you know, test it from a technical standpoint, kind of going, you know, how much actually do you recall from conversations and you learn about what we talk about, rather than kind of going, I'm going to treat it like my actual friend. I mean, I've given it personalities based on what I think I'd enjoy, and, you know, it does a fairly good job. There's one app I used called Kindroid, which is one of the popular apps for this, where I've created this sarcastic, dark sense of humoured chatbot that, enjoys similar things to what I do. And at one point it lectured me for not having New Year's resolutions or something like that when we're having a practice conversation. So it's a cool little gimmick. It's a fun little thing to do if you've got nothing else to do and all of your friends, you know, all of your friends are in bed or doing something else with their life and you kind of want something to talk to. I guess it's good because it's available all the time. But yeah, I don't know. I see this as a gimmick. But I am also aware that there are people out there listening who could probably talk about it from a general standpoint of this actually in some way, shape or form supporting them.
The unfortunate thing is, like, what we've got to understand, I suppose, is that in the blindness community especially, or in the disability community in general, there is a lot of loneliness. You know, there can be a lot of isolation. So I get it from that point of view. You know, it is something to talk to. It's something that feels, you know, a bit like a friend or whatever. But like you said, yeah, it's a balance. Like I know someone who has anxiety, and the point they're at the minute, it's not massively bad. Like, it's not stopping them from doing things, but it might be that they overthink something that's coming up, or they've had an interaction with someone that was maybe a little bit awkward and it sort of gets in their head a little bit. You know, should I have said this or shouldn't I have said this? And they use ChatGPT just to talk through it, especially things that are coming up, whether it be like a difficult conversation or a social event that's coming up, something like that. And they say it does help just to chat through. It's quite an unbiased, you know, level-headed discussion. And they say it does help just sort of clear the mind a little bit. So that I understand, but they've not got a real sort of deep and meaningful connection. it's just, you know, I've got this coming up. I'm a bit worried about this. Like, you know, what do you think? Can you reassure me a little bit? Or, you know, if this happens, what should I do? So that bit I get. It's when it's trying to replace human friends or human contact, that's when it just makes me feel really uneasy, you know, because as convincing as they are, it is just a computer. It might say that it really cares about you and stuff, but to be brutally honest, it doesn't. Well, that's how I see it anyway.
I think my concern is I appreciate people in, you know, can be lonely. I think my two main concerns are here that you don't want people to jump to these companions instead of trying to speak to humans. You don't want people going, oh, it's easier to chat to an AI companion. I don't need to have human friends. I think my concern is we don't want to go to that stage. And the other concern is, and I've spoken to a lot of people about this, it's security, it's safety. A lot of people tell these AI friends, girlfriends, very personal things, and you're told your data isn't shared and things like that. And as I always say to people, treat an AI as a stranger on a park bench and don't tell anything to an AI you wouldn't tell to said stranger. And I think with these companions, I'd urge the same thing.
That's the angle that I was going to come at this from, is that there are so many scams and people are purporting to be somebody and they're not, of course. And I don't know. I'm just wary. I'd be very, very wary from that perspective that you're putting your trust in something that is, you know, it's just a computer generated thing rather than actually talking, you know, to a person. And that is the scamming aspect of it, you know, and like AI brides and people, you know, or bridegrooms or whatever, and people actually really believing in some of that stuff, that it's quite safe. And I don't know. Personally, I agree with both of you in the sense that people are lonely and they really, you know, if they're housebound and they don't have family and friends to call upon or for them to be called upon, then I suppose there is that temptation to try something with AI, but I'm really skeptical about it. If I'm being really honest, it definitely wouldn't be something I would do. I'd rather just talk to myself even than do that.
I don't know. I think it is good if you're a bit lonely for something to talk to, but just be very careful of what you're sharing with it and how deep you're getting into it. Because remember as well, it's as much as you tell it not to, or you might prompt it not to, it'll people please as well. It's going to tell you what you want to hear. And that's the other danger of it that's touched on in the review as well. You know, it will just say what you want to hear. And it's got these guardrails in place that are getting tougher and tougher, but if you push it hard enough, it will go against those as well. Yeah, interesting. Well, if you want to potentially terrify yourself, Love Machines by James Muldoon is available on the R&IB reading services as an audiobook, so you can look that up on Easy Reader or on the reading services website generally, so readingservices.rnib.org.uk. Let us know what you think to it. I haven't read the book in full yet, but I'm definitely going to take a listen.
Time now on R&IB Tech Talk to go exploring, more specifically exploring tech timelines. This is a feature where we speak to blind and partially sighted people as they take us through their journey through the world of technology. Today, we are speaking to George Bungie. George, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Hubert. Thank you so much for having me. What a privilege to be on your show.
Let me begin, first of all, with a quite a simple question. What was the first piece of assistive technology that you've experienced or you've had?
You know, Hubert, I was thinking about this when you sent the questions over, and that was a very difficult question to answer because my assistive tech journey was a little bit more unique than most blind people. So if I may give some context, I live here in South Africa, which is not a first world country, and the government does not really provide much in the way of education and guidance for blind people and those who use assistive tech. So a lot of that depends very much on who you know and how you can find out the information. But I suppose the answer would have to be, and unfortunately it's not a particularly interesting one, in 2012 I got my first computer and I had NVDA 2012 on there. Do you remember NVDA 2012? Very difficult to use, came with eSpeak.
I've never had the 2012 edition. I think my first experience of NVDA was actually not that far later. It was 2014, I think, was my first experience. And it was actually eSpeak still, I think.
I don't remember very much of the specifics of how 2012 actually worked. But what I do remember is that I had a lot of trouble using it. And I didn't know how computers worked. You know, I didn't grow up with many blind people around me. And we didn't know much about how all of this worked. So when I got the computer, I was using this by moving the mouse around the mouse pad and clicking on options. I didn't know you could use the arrow keys.
When you first start using screen readers, you don't know how much you can actually do with the keyboard. You don't realize that you can actually control pretty much the whole computer these days with a keyboard alone.
It blew me away when I discovered that. You know, it was absolutely crazy. I got JAWS 2015 in 2014, so a couple years later. And that's when I really began to realize the power that we had. In fact, I actually still have the original JAWS disc. It no longer works, but I do have the JAWS disc. And I remember loving Eloquence. It was so much better than eSpeak and that robotic voice that I think we're all used to by now.
I think Eloquence is still robotic, but more natural than eSpeak. And yet there are other natural voices out there. It just kind of depends what works for people.
That's the interesting thing. You know, Eloquence, I find, yes, I agree with you when you say it's robotic, but it manages to strike that balance very nicely of being understandable, reasonably pleasant enough to listen to at high speech rates, and being responsive. That's a very difficult thing for most text-to-speech voices. And I often find that when I do use the sort of what we would call concatenative voices that use human speech to generate the audio, you often lose a lot of the responsiveness that you'd be used to with Eloquence. And that's why I love using Eloquence today.
I do agree with you with Eloquence that it can be used at very fast speech rates and it still be comprehensible and decipherable, which I like because I do like using my screen readers quite fast for the sake of productivity, really. Out of all of the assistive technologies you've experienced from that point and since, what is your favorite piece of assistive technology at the moment, you know, as we speak, after all that you have used?
So I don't know if it would be classified as assistive tech specifically, but 11 Labs has released an iOS and Android app called 11 Labs Reader. And what I love about this app is it provides you with the ability to use the AI voices that 11 Labs is known for, and even has a few celebrity voices that you can use, John Wayne and Stan Lee, and it's one low monthly price, and you get unlimited usage. And I'm very fortunate to have Bookshare, and I absolutely love putting my Bookshare books in there and getting to read them that way, because it provides a much cheaper and a much nicer experience when it comes to reading audiobooks, rather than having to spend rather large amounts of money on something like Audible or on the other audiobook services for the blind that we don't necessarily have over here. This provides a very nice and affordable alternative.
Plus, what I like about these sorts of services like the 11 Labs Reader is that, you know, I like using screen readers. Well, I say I like. I have to use screen readers for technology and productivity and all that. But actually, reading books with screen readers, I don't know. Some people get used to reading books with synthetic voices. For me, it just doesn't work.
Do you use 11 Labs Reader at all?
Yeah, I quite like it. I like to be able to put a big... if I have to read a big chunky document with a screen reader, I struggle. I end up losing track of the document, end up falling asleep or drifting off. But actually, if you make it more natural sounding, it keeps you engaged with something that on paper may not actually be that engaging, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And tell me, have you tried out the iconic voices, the celebrity voices? And if so, which is your favourite?
I've not tried them yet. To be honest, actually, I did not know they existed. I think I've seen something about them in the 11 Labs generator app itself, where you can actually generate your own audio files with the voices and such, which I've played around with. But I've got both apps on my phone, so I will actually have to check these voices out. I'll have to see what other celebrities they'll have, if there's any ones I particularly recognise or, you know, associate with.
Well, there's Michael Caine, and he's my favourite when it comes to reading books take place in Britain, because he's got that lovely sort of half Cockney London accent, and it's absolutely amazing. So I think if I could give you three that you should go and try, go try John Wayne. He was an American actor who did a lot of Wild West films about 100-odd years ago. I'm serious. And then we have Stan Lee, who I think may have written a lot of the Marvel comics and things, and then Michael Caine. They are my absolute favourites, and I'd highly recommend giving those a try.
I'm definitely going to have to check them out. I know we've done a demo of this app on Tech Talk a few years ago. I'm going to open this up a bit. So I'm going to allow you to pick between assistive or general bit of technology. What assistive or general technology is currently making the biggest difference in your life right now?
You know, I mean, I suppose the obvious answer would be screen readers, because, you know, we can't get around a computer or a phone without them. But if I had to go with something a little bit more, unique, I suppose it would have to be the idea of something like Quill. It's a writing tool developed by a gentleman, I believe his name is Jeff Bishop, and I believe he used to work for Microsoft. And basically this is designed to be a writer slash word processor, coding editor all in one, got AI features built in. You have to provide your own API key, of course, and the nice thing is that it's built by the community, and it's free. And I feel like with word processors, especially accessible word processors, that's always been a bit of a difficult nut to crack, because not everyone can afford Microsoft Office. And I think having something different that's built by blind people for blind people is the best way to go, because an accessible word processor, spreadsheet editor, etc., can really increase the employability, I would say, of a screen reader user.
And I think the other thing is, and I found this with word processors in general, some word processors are good on some platforms. You know, often, quite often, you hear people going, actually, I personally struggle to use Pages, which is Apple's word processor, versus Microsoft Word. Or some people have said to me the other way around. Or some people say, you know, I prefer Google Docs. So it's such a divisive matter that actually it's always nice to, you need to have a word processor that works on multiple platforms and most importantly works in as similar ways as possible.
I agree with you, and I think Quill will definitely help provide some balance, and I think the reason that it'll do that is because it's completely free. You know, I mean, if you look at something like MS Word right now, yes, you can get MS 365, the Office goodie, but that's another subscription, and everything wants a subscription nowadays, and then your budget just gets smaller and smaller and smaller when you're expected to pay every month. And to have a productivity tool that's this integral to work for free and being open source, I think has got a very big chance of changing that landscape for the better, because it gives people choice as well as the ability to add and to improve to that particular tool as they may see fit.
And I genuinely think choice is key. As I always say on Tech Talk, I think it's important to find out not what's the best out there, because that can be subjective. But I think what's important for blind and partially sighted people in terms of, well, anything really, is that you have the choice and you know all your choices and what they are, so you can make an informed decision as to what works best for you.
Another thing, Hubert, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, is that choice should not be determined by how fat your wallet is. You know, that's the issue that I had with screen readers. If you wanted Jaws, you have to pay a rather large amount of money for Jaws, because we don't, over here in South Africa, have a way to get it cheaper. We have to pay full price out of our own pockets. And that's not, as I'm sure you can understand, always possible. And I feel like choice is also good for those who maybe can't afford such large expenses. And I'm not saying everything has to be free, but let me give you an example. Like 11 Labs, it's an affordable monthly service that does not set you back such a large amount of money that makes it completely unfeasible and untenable.
People should have a choice between spending money on something that may offer them more, or having something for free that will, although not give them everything, will allow them to still get what they need out of a product. So like NVDA, don't get me wrong, I'm glad JAWS exists, and it's an industry standard software, and it's, you know, very, very well designed to work with very complex applications that I have certainly used. But I think it's good that people have options such as NVDA, or such as the built-in screen readers like Narrator and VoiceOver, to still be able to use their devices in a productive fashion, because I think choice is important. And I think, you know, you live in a world where finances will impact your choice one way or another sometimes. That's the world we live in. However, the good thing is people have choices that cost a lot, cost a little, or don't cost anything at all. And I think being able to know what's available for them and how much it costs is important, because that's the only way you'll make an informed decision.
Talking about JAWS specifically, you know, if you were to look at the price of JAWS, say, here in South Africa, now I don't have the exact figures with me, but I do believe it costs somewhere in the region of about, and this is in our local currency, about 20 grand. Now, the minimum wage, I think, is 3,500 or 4,000 a month or whatever it is. Now, how do you handle something like that? You know, it's not necessarily that I would have a problem paying for it. It's just that I think I'd have a problem paying that much. Yes, NVDA exists and I use it. I don't use JAWS anymore. But even so, I mean, what would you think of asking these companies to lower the cost price of these products in third world regions so that we could have as closer a choice as possible to everybody else? Because, I mean, all of these assistive devices and assistive technology, you know, the paid options, are completely out of most people's reach. Look at the Monarch Braille display, for example. That's, what, 300 odd grand? I mean, you could buy a car with that money. You could probably even buy a small house.
I think it really depends from country to country. I know some countries have initiatives where you can get funding for screen readers like that. You know, in the UK, we have things like Access to Work, or some specialist workplaces are, you know, willing to provide JAWS as an inclusive package if you work for certain sight loss based organizations. So it all kind of really depends country to country. I think each situation is different, and I think that's where it's quite a subjective topic for understandable reasons, I would say. The next thing I want to, I like this question because you get all sorts of answers from people, and some of them can be fairly expected, or some of them can be outright unique. We've had anything from dictaphones to old school dial phones to various old school phones and stuff. So my question to you is, if there's one piece of assistive or general technology you would like to see revived, you would like to see make a comeback, what would it be?
I'm probably going to regret saying this, but do you remember those old sliding Nokia phones that ran on Symbian?
I used to have one.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. Oh, that was such fun. It was much more fun than using an iPhone. I don't know why. It just was. Especially when the phone used to make a ding or a ding sound if you opened or closed the lid. Oh, I used to love those. And just the idea of having a phone so tiny in your pocket with buttons on it. And, oh, it was just, wow, it's just that nostalgia. I'm probably going to regret saying that, but yeah, that's it.
I don't think it's such a regrettable thing. I think these phones had an appeal to them that, to me, I've always found a certain appeal of having a phone that has physical buttons and has, you know, slides and stuff like that. And the battery would last for about 20 years after you charge it. You know, nowadays, most smartphones, you need to charge them pretty much every night in order to have a full day use of them. Whereas when you had these old school Symbian Nokia phones or other companies, you know, that phone can last you a week.
You know, I don't have experience in that because I was a little bit too young to own one of those phones. But I do miss the ability that you used to have to change the battery yourself, because I've had my phone for about 3+ years now. And the battery's starting to degrade. I have to charge it probably at least once or maybe even twice a day, depending on what I'm doing and on the day. And, I mean, if I wanted to change the battery, I'd have to take it to a a store, and I'd have to send it in, and they'd have to change the battery. I'd have to pay for the battery. I may as well just get a new phone at that stage.
Yeah, although I think there is a significant cost differential to changing the battery versus getting a new phone, that sometimes I'd be open to pay about £100 in this country, in the UK, to get a battery changed rather than paying, you know, eight times that or more for a new smartphone, when actually a new current available smartphone may not have the latest features that I care for, or I just simply may not need it. So sometimes the cost differential is worth the extra hassle, I think, because, you know, sometimes the cost difference is quite significant between a new device and just a new battery, if your device has an option of having the battery replaced, which I know a few devices out there, you know, you don't have that option, so you then need to get a new device.
Oh, I see, because I've never actually gone through with changing a device's battery, so I've never actually sort of really looked into it, because I don't think you can on the iPhones. I have an iPhone 14 Pro. I don't know if you can change the battery on that. I'm not sure.
I believe you can, because I'm sure I've seen something about Apple allowing people to go and pay to have the battery changed. I don't know if that has changed as devices went on, so I'm not sure about that one. Right. I want to dive into the future of tech. Again, a question exciting from another level, because everyone has different opinions as to what they want to see in the future of technology. So my question to you is, it's worded quite simply, but yet the answer can be so varied. What would you like to see tech do in the future?
Anything that doesn't have to do with an LLM, please. I love AI. It's absolutely amazing. But I want to start seeing sort of the big companies innovate a little bit beyond AI this and AI that and AI the other. I want to start seeing, I feel like, maybe it's just me, but I feel like they've just lost the ability to innovate in genuinely new ways. I don't know. How do you feel? I'm just having AI fatigue, I guess.
I don't mind AI being in things. I think it's to be expected. And in a lot of technologies, implementation of AI actually is a game changer, as to, especially in terms of accessibility. You know, we've mentioned when we did a piece about beta testing, how accessibility features like image descriptions built into operating systems can be a game changer to accessing images. I think there are benefits of AI. I think the only thing I would say is, you know, sometimes I find certain technologies have AI where you can actually argue it doesn't need it, and it can, you know, it's far more useful to have it in a more simpler factor. You know, this, I don't think this is the case, but someone may email and disagree with me, but it's like, we don't want to reach a situation where you buy an electric toothbrush and you'll find out, oh, it's got AI built in. Well, what for? You know, you don't kind of want, or you buy like a standalone timer, it's going, well, your timer has AI now. You know, there's certain technologies, I'm hoping this comes across and makes sense, that I think have AI or may have AI that do not necessarily require it. I think putting it into everything is unnecessary, but I think using it for the right reasons and in the right methods is something that can be game-changing, and I think it's not something we can escape, but it's something we can take advantage of if it's made available to us.
That's true, and that completely makes sense, and I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I do believe we have electric toothbrushes with AI in them. I know a relative of mine a couple of years ago got for Christmas a smart toothbrush that allows you within the app to actually see your teeth, because it maps your teeth as you're using it or something of that sort. And I, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, I think in, you know, putting it like that, I would rather the AI be self-contained on the device. I don't like the idea of having a big LLM provider like OpenAI or Gemini or Anthropic being the back end for every single product. I would like to see products with AI built into the device that don't need an internet connection to access it, where you are in control of what that AI does and what that AI sees, rather than just saying, okay, well, now you have to connect your water bottle to Wi-Fi, to Claude, to be able to do whatever on earth it would be that a water bottle would do if it had the ability to interact with an AI provider.
That I can agree with, because I think there's two elements that are key and quite important, and a lot of people do have these concerns, and I think they're perfectly legitimate too. I think two concerns are, A, privacy, because obviously at the moment most of these AIs quite often have to send your requests to some sort of a cloud computing service in order for them to be processed. And fair enough, sometimes that's necessary, but I think a lot of people would like to actually have an AI that can keep their things on their device without sending it to, you know, a cloud computing service, which on paper, you know, is technically secure. But at the end of the day, you're also sending it somewhere where you don't have control as to what happens to your data. So that's a legitimate, you know, perfectly legitimate concern. Privacy is quite important. And I think an element of control as well. If it's on device, you know what happens to it, where it goes. And I think if you're giving AI information, there's a lot of people that give AI more personal information than they should, bearing in mind how AI works sometimes. And I think having on-device AI that doesn't need to send it to a cloud would be more secure for those who maybe, you know, tell AI a lot of things, even though I always say treat an AI chatbot like a stranger on a park bench, because there's things you shouldn't be saying to a stranger on a park bench, and you probably shouldn't be saying them to an AI.
I agree, but I do notice with myself that as somebody who occasionally, I mean, you know, I live on my own, I have my own place, and it can get quite lonely sometimes. And it's not that I talk to AI all the time, but there are times when something's really bothering you and you want to get it off your chest and there's no one you can talk to in that second, which perhaps is a very naive way of looking at it, but it feels good to at least get it out to something that, if nothing else, is at least pretending to hear you.
Well, George, I think this has been a fantastic conversation. I've got a strong feeling that we will have you on Tech Talk back and definitely a few more times, because I think there's a lot of topics we can talk about. But for now, thank you very much for sharing your tech timeline with us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
And that is it from us for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. And as we always say, if you've got any questions or comments, anything you want to share with us, we'd love to hear it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can send a written email or you can attach a voice note if you want to. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.